Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is March 27th, 2024, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is It's Unhappy Hour Again. Mortality in younger patients with alcohol-related emergency department attendances. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Kirsty Chalin. She's a consultant in emergency medicine at Lancashire Teaching Hospital. Welcome back to the SGEM, Kirsty.
Hi, Ken. It's great to be back.
What I really like about doing these episodes, not only do I get to interact with wonderful guests and authors, but I do discover some music that I haven't heard of from the 1980s. I was not familiar with this song. It's Happy Hour Again.
Absolute classic of the British 80s lexicon, Ken. We clearly need to expand your geographical parameters.
See, just when you think you know that you're an expert, and I like to identify as an expert on the 80s, you come along and show me there's always more to learn.
Never stop learning.
Never. Lifelong learning right here. Okay, why don't you give us a case to frame this episode?
Okay, so it's Friday evening at the end of the academic year in the pediatric emergency department. You're with the parents of a 15-year-old girl who's been brought in acutely intoxicated from an unofficial school's out party. Although your patient's recovered and is now fit for discharge, her parents are worried that this may mean she's more at risk in the future.
Well, we know that alcohol is a major cause of mortality and morbidity across the world, and the emergency department attendance due to alcohol is rising. We also know that adults who attend the ED with alcohol-related problems are at an increased risk of death in the following year. In fact, we discussed exactly that scenario in episode 313, where we agreed that increasing frequency of alcohol-associated ED visits was associated with increased mortality.
However, we haven't previously looked at the effect of alcohol in this specific vulnerable age group.
Until now. So what's the clinical question?
Is a first ED presentation related to alcohol associated with increased mortality in adolescents and young adults?
And what's the reference for this?
Harrison et al. Mortality in adolescents and young adults following a first presentation to the emergency department for alcohol. That's in Academic Emergency Medicine, March 2024.
That's right. This is another hot off the press episode. All right, Kirsty, let's go through the PCOT. What was the population?
Patients aged 12 to 29 years with one or more ED visits in Ontario between 2009 and 2015.
And there really wasn't an intervention. We were not giving people, or they were not giving people alcohol, correct?
Yeah, I don't think we have the prescription software to be able to do that.
And so what they were really looking for was any visit related to alcohol. What did they compare it to?
No visits related to alcohol.
And then what was their primary outcome?
Mortality at 1 year.
And did they have any secondary outcomes?
They did. They had mortality at 3 years, cause of death, and predictors of death.
And what type of study was this?
This is a retrospective cohort study.
This is an SGEM hot off the press, and we're pleased to have one of the authors, Dr. Daniel Myron, on the show. Dr. Myron is a Canadian research chair, social accountability, University of Ottawa investigator, assistant professor, Department of Family Medicine, University of Ottawa, associate scientist, Ottawa Hospital Research Institute, with a cross-appointment School of Epidemiology and Public Health at the University of Ottawa. Wow, Daniel, how do you have time to do anything else?
Many of those roles are overlapping.
Well, you sound a little under the weather.
I got what I think was hand, foot, and mouth from my 2-year-olds last week, and it's a slow recovery of the nice post-viral cough.
Yeah, I've seen a number of cases of hand, foot, and mouth recently in the emergency department, and my standard joke is to say, I suffer from 2 out of the 3 of those things. I just have foot and mouth disease instead of hand, foot, and mouth disease. Wow. So you seem very busy with your clinical responsibilities and your research responsibilities, and you're under the weather. So thank you very much for coming on the show today. But how did you find the time to look into young people and the issue of alcohol?
So back in 2019, we did a study tracking how emergency room visits for alcohol had changed over time in Ontario. And we found that, you know, if you looked between 2003 and 2016, which was the frame we studied in that study, that there'd been a very large increase in emergency room visits for alcohol, and that the largest increases were in young people, and particularly women. And when we put that research out, there was, you know, I think people were quite interested in it, and it was a concerning trend. But a lot of the comments were, was so what? You know, you're saying that there's a bunch of 19-year-olds showing up in Emerge, and they're intoxicated, and it's increasing over time. And does that really matter? Do we care? Are these just young people who've, you know, had an unfortunate evening, a youthful indiscretion, and they're going to, you know, quote unquote, wise up, and this isn't significant? And, you know, our clinical gut feeling was that sure, that probably applies to a group of these individuals, but that this was really capturing something that was, you know, important for the health of the public. And we set out to figure out exactly what happens to these young people after visits.
Well, there's always a backstory, so thanks for sharing that. I would like to point out that research is usually not done in isolation. It's not just one individual out there doing research. You had a team. So would you like to give a shout out to your co-authors?
This is absolutely team science. And we had a fantastic team of researchers and clinicians. I want to give a particular thanks to Lindsay Harrison, who's a research coordinator in my lab and was the lead author on this study. And we also had some excellent support from research analysts at ICS.
All right. Well, why don't you give the conclusions that you came up with in your paper?
So what we said is that, and we studied it in this study, we were capturing a first-time emergency room visit for alcohol. And we said that incident emergency department visits for alcohol in adolescents and young adults are associated with a high risk of one-year mortality. This is especially true in young adults with concurrent mental health or substance use disorders, in people who have a more severe initial presentation.
Wow. Just hearing you say that, an increased risk, and associated, but an increased risk of one-year mortality if you're a young person who's shown up in the emergency department for the first time with an alcohol-related situation. So, wow, I'm really looking to dig into that more. But before we do that, Kirsty, let's go through the quality checklist for observational cohort studies. Are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
Did the study address a clearly focused issue?
Yes.
Did the authors use an appropriate method to answer their question?
Yes, they did.
Do you think the cohort was recruited in an acceptable way?
Yes, I do.
Was the exposure accurately measured to minimize bias?
Unsure on that one, and we'll come back to that when we get nerdy later.
Oh, I love talking nerdy. Okay, so was the outcome accurately measured to minimize bias?
Yes.
Have the authors identified all important confounding factors?
No, I don't think so. And again, that'll be another excuse to be nerdy.
Oh, I don't need excuses to be nerdy. I just am. Was the follow-up of subjects complete enough?
Yes, it was.
How precise are the results?
So the confidence intervals are well away from zero, so precise enough for me.
Do you believe the results?
Yes, I do.
Do you think you can apply these results to your local population?
So I think you in Ontario probably can, yes. To me in the UK, with likely very different services and follow-up for alcohol-related attendances, I'm not so sure.
Do the results of this study fit with other available evidence?
Yes, they do.
And the final question, what about funding for this?
So this was funded by the Canadian Institutes of Health Research, the Ontario Ministry of Health, and the Ontario Ministry of Long-Term Care. One author has declared receiving speaker fees from Pharma, but on unrelated subjects.
So nobody was sponsored by Big Alcohol?
Not that they've admitted to, no.
Here's a case of beer, eh? All right, let's dig into those results. There were over 71,000 alcohol-related attendances out of 2.3 million total attendances during the study period. Of the alcohol-related attendances, over half, 56%, were male, 25% in the lowest income quintile, and 68% related to acute intoxication. One-year mortality was 0.35% in the alcohol group versus 0.1% in the non-alcohol group for an adjusted odds ratio of 3. The odds ratio varied across demographics, and we'll put the details in the show notes. Kirsty, what was the key result?
ED attendance with an alcohol-related issue was associated with an odds ratio of 3.07 for mortality at 1 year.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's bring Daniel back and talk nerdy to him, okay? Daniel, we've got 5 things we're going to ask you. And if you could give us your wisdom on each of these things that could give us a better understanding of your research. Are you ready to go, Daniel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. The first thing is, this was a retrospective study. You could only explore covariates that were routinely recorded. So there is a risk of missing unknown confounders like a chaotic lifestyle or being neurodivergent. Do you have any insights into these based on your experience in the field?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is population level data, right? We're capturing every single emergency department visit in Ontario, and it comes with cool strengths, like this is a study of 2.2 million youth, but all sorts of important variables don't come in. And here, I absolutely agree that you're an emergency room physician. You've got a, you know, you think back to the case, you've got a 15-year-old and they're intoxicated after an evening out. And, you know, if they're underhoused or homeless, it's a very different individual than someone who has stable housing. And we don't have data on that. I think the other piece that's really, really important that we don't have data on is a lot of the features related to the alcohol use. We don't know how many standard drinks were consumed. We don't know if there's we don't have a blood alcohol level. We don't know how long this individual has been drinking. Is this someone who says, hey, I had a severe drinking episode with friends, or I'm after a 2-week, I'm going through a 2-week binge of drinking? And all of these things absolutely would be expected to have important clinical context. And those aren't there. What we did see in the study is that more severe presentations, and that when the emergency room physician says, hey, this person was actually here for alcohol withdrawal, or I think they have an alcohol use disorder, it's not just that they're here intoxicated, those people tend to do worse. And I would suspect that, you know, the more standard drinks you've had or having a very high elevation in blood alcohol concentration are probably also associated, if you have that kind of data, with worse outcomes.
So these are just standard limitations to a retrospective study design. You can't control for things that aren't routinely measured. And if you're not moving forward with a prospective study, you can't actually capture that because you're just looking back at data retrospectively and gathering as much as you can. So thanks for the additional information, and I appreciate the limitations of this study design.
Yeah, agreed. And I think that probably relates to nerdy point number 2, which is around your inclusion criteria. So you relied on ICD-10 coding to identify alcohol-related attendances. And I agree, this is likely to be highly accurate for diagnoses like acute intoxication and alcoholic cirrhosis. Do you think it risks under-identifying the involvement of alcohol in other situations and presentations, like maybe intimate partner violence or accidental injury?
Yeah, I think about when we consider what this study is capturing, I think this is, you know, and again, if you actually look at what the codes that we pull out in this population are, most people who are, you know, having their first time alcohol visit in this age range are having it for, are being documented in our study for having, you know, an alcohol use disorder, alcohol intoxication, I do not think that this cohort has well captured individuals who are in, you know, a motor vehicle collision, which alcohol was involved in, or individuals who are in a fight that alcohol was involved in, or intimate partner violence. And those, you know, again, those many of those presentations probably are also at increased risk of a variety of health outcomes in the long term. But I think that as we think about this study and what it captures, this is more young people with clear, direct alcohol-related caused emergency room visits who are coming in.
I think I'd agree with you in that case. Being involved in coding in UK emergency medicine, we are very good at recording the primary diagnosis, but far less at the secondary ones. And I think that's always going to be a challenge where you use giant data sets like this one. And we have clinicians whose primary concern is the care of the patient rather than maybe the coding side of things.
And I think that often physicians are in a place where, look, I think that someone comes in, they're very intoxicated, they have an elevated blood alcohol concentration. It's easy to say, you know, this is an alcohol-related visit. Attributing the role of alcohol in other, you know, in an event of intimate partner violence is a hard judgment call. You know, you can be sitting, and you know, and alcohol is involved in much of intimate partner violence, and it's a major risk factor and contributor. But for a clinician to sit there and say, I'm really certain, and I'm going to document it in the chart that this is involved, is a different type of attribution to make.
Daniel, the third thing we wanted to bring up was the COVID-19 effect. You deliberately truncated your cohort in 2015 to exclude the effect of COVID-19 on mortality. So this is what I refer to as the BC times, the before COVID times. And that makes sense. But do you think it impacts on the generalizability of your findings? Because you had this 3-year outcome as one of your secondary outcomes, and so you truncated it so it wouldn't drift into the COVID period. But you comment actually in the manuscript about how the pandemic altered drinking patterns. So could you expand on that a bit?
Yeah, I think that I actually don't view this as a big threat to the generalizability of the findings of this study, pre-pandemic or post-pandemic. So if you're sitting here right now and you've got you're in a busy emergency room and, you know, we return to the case and you've got a young person in their teens with a visit due to alcohol, I think that the findings that we found would apply. I think that during the pandemic, when you have this major competing risk of death from COVID-19 and that people were drinking in different ways, and, you know, you think about a lot of the in-person bar drinking was reduced or stopped during some of the periods of enhanced public health measures and physical distancing. So we didn't want to include findings from that time period because people were drinking differently and they were drinking in different contexts and they had different kind of risks. But, you know, we are very much in a quote unquote post-pandemic period. And I think that the findings from the pre-pandemic period apply afterwards, and I'd anticipate they would generalize well.
Well, thanks for expanding on that and clearing that up a bit.
And as we said, times are changing, which brings us on to our fourth nerdy point. You've used biological sex at birth, I assume, as a covariate, presumably because that's what you have recorded on a data set this size in Ontario. From your experience, do you think your findings might be different in gender non-conforming patients?
Yeah, we use biological sex because that's what we have. That's what's recorded within our data sets. There, later in time, people can, you know, you maybe have some gender elements that are captured, but not systematically and not well in this study. I think that it's absolutely an important question would these findings that we see differ for gender non-conforming patients? We don't have data on it here. And I would expect there's been some studies saying that gender non-conforming patients may have higher rates of comorbid mental health issues. And, you know, and again, it depends on the clinical population. But I would certainly say that it would be an area worth investigating and having a clinical sense for.
The fifth and final nerdy point that we wanted to talk to you about, Daniel, was intersectionality. You included a logistic regression analysis, which identified being male, being age 25 to 29, attending with harmful use or withdrawal rather than an acute intoxication, and having comorbid mental health or substance abuse diagnosis as a risk for death. Did you have the opportunity to examine the interaction of these? So is it disproportionately worse to be an alcohol-dependent 26-year-old male compared to a alcohol-dependent 18-year-old woman?
So what we did pursue was age and sex interaction. So we said, you know, is being young and female different from being young and male? And in general, we did not find too much in the way of age and sex interactions here. We saw that the risk of death increases as you get older, which again, it makes sense in the sense that you've had longer periods of time to, you know, accrue some organ damage from drinking, your substance use disorder, your alcohol use disorder may be getting more and more severe with time. But it seemed as when we pursued the age-sex interaction that things were fairly similar between males and females.
That's really interesting. Thank you. So those are our five nerdy questions that we wanted to explore. Is there anything else you want to highlight from your study or your research areas?
So one thing that I would highlight is it's interesting to think of what are people dying from? And we looked at that in this study. And, you know, I think, you know, caveats that there's limitations in the data that we have about getting the direct and the contributing causes of death. But what we see is that a lot of the deaths that occur in the alcohol cohort are for alcohol poisoning, but also for opioid and other drug poisonings. And again, I would look at this group and I wouldn't say it's necessarily, it's not true that when you look at this 3 times elevated risk of mortality within a year, that all of them are dying from alcohol. I think that this is capturing a group of individuals who are at high clinical risk and they're dying from a variety of different causes. 15% are dying by suicide. 42% die with some form of trauma being coded there, like a motor vehicle collision or an assault. A large portion have other substances. So as you're grappling with what do you do clinically, you know, first the idea is that this is an individual who may be at higher risk, and it's certainly worth thinking that this is not just a one-off event and that they're going to recover from their night of drinking and go on their way and be fine. But the second piece is that it's not just the alcohol that you should be thinking about, but exploring, you know, what are the other lifestyle factors and behavioral risk factors that are there that are putting them at increased risk of death within the year.
Well, those are our 5 nerdy questions, and thank you for giving us a little extra at the end. That's why we love having one of the authors on these SJAM Hot Off the Press episodes. Now we're going to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SJAM's conclusions.
And we agree with the author's conclusions.
What's the SJAM bottom line?
A first ED presentation related to alcohol is associated with increased mortality in adolescents and young adults.
So how are you going to resolve that case you presented?
I'm going to explain to the teenager and her parents that there is an increased risk associated with this alcohol-related presentation, but that their daughter's age and gender reduce this risk. I'm also going to signpost them to the local alcohol harm reduction and family support services.
And how are you going to apply this clinically?
I'm going to work with my ED education team to ensure that all the staff are aware of this risk and able and willing to support patients to address their alcohol issues when they present.
All right, it's time for the Keener contest. Last week's winner was Dr. Kay Dingwell. She knew a genetic disorder which raises the risk of pneumothorax and is associated with skin tumors and kidney cancer is Britt Hoge-Dube. I did not know that. Did you know about this one, Kirsty? Because I didn't.
No, and I was listening to that podcast, and I didn't know there was even a disorder that pulled them together, let alone what it was called.
Yeah, me neither. So what do you got for a question this week? Are you going to stump me again this week?
Okay. According to the Guinness Book of Records, where was the oldest evidence of an alcoholic beverage found?
Oh, okay. So you're looking for where the oldest alcohol beverage was found. If any of the listeners know this, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize.
And now it's your turn, S-Gemmers. What do you think of this episode on the risks of alcohol for adolescents and young adults? Tweet or X your comments using hashtag SGEMHOP. What questions do you have for Daniel and his team? Ask them on the SGEM blog, and the best social media feedback will be published in Academic Emergency Medicine.
Well, thank you, Kirsty, for doing another SGEM hot off the press.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Really interesting topic. Thank you.
And thank you, Daniel, for, you know, you're under the weather and you still came and did this. That's the commitment researchers have to knowledge translation and wanting to talk about the research. So thanks very much, Daniel.
Thanks for having me, Ken and Kirsty.
Let's see if you can get through the SGEM tagline with out coughing up a lung.
But actually can't now that you say it. Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.